Welcome to the ADAA podcast on complicated grief. Today we're talking with Dr. Catherine Scheer, who is the Marion E. Kenworthy Professor of Psychiatry at Columbia University School of Social Work, as well as at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Scheer. Let me ask you the first question. Can you describe what you mean by complicated grief and how it's different from bereavement in general?
Sure, and I kind of want to start with some ground rules here, which is that we might want to define our terms. And what I mean by that is bereavement and grief and mourning, they're used in lots of different ways by people. And for the purposes of our discussion today, I'd like to say that we're going to call the loss of someone very close, the situation of having lost someone very close, is what we're going to call bereavement. And the response to that loss is what we're going to call grief. And so grief is the psychological and really physical response to having lost someone very close. And mourning is the process by which we come to terms with that loss. And so what mourning does is it essentially, usually, transforms a very intense, acute grief response, which is often, maybe even usually, very, very painful and disruptive of a person's life. So the mourning process, when it's successful, usually transforms that very acute grief into a much more subdued and really permanent, we call it integrated grief, in which the loss really becomes an ongoing part of a person's life, but very much in the background, or, you know, just it doesn't any longer have the sort of center stage billing that grief has right after someone dies. So that's basically the background for understanding complicated grief, because what happens with complicated grief is that something goes on around the person's understanding of the circumstances of the death or the consequences of the death, or sometimes both, that complicates the mourning process. It really complicates the grief response so that the mourning process doesn't really work. And instead, the person becomes essentially kind of stuck in the acute grief response, which is that very, very painful feeling of longing and yearning for the person who died, and just missing them so much that almost nothing else matters. And, you know, and kind of like not having much of an interest in their ongoing life, or even feeling like they don't know, like they're lost, like they don't have any more purpose or meaning in their life because this person is no longer there. So that's the condition and we call complicated grief. And once it starts, it has a tendency to kind of get pretty much fixed. And so becomes very, very chronic. So people come to see therapists who are grieving the loss of someone who might have died 3 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, or even longer, and they still have the feeling that person, it's like they just died a week ago.
So that was my next question, how you recognize complicated grief in someone. So there are some parameters that you can use to assess complicated grief in an individual.
Right, exactly. And actually, what's very interesting is that the disorder of complicated grief has not yet been in the psychiatric diagnostic system, that is the DSM that you're probably familiar with. And in this round, it is being proposed for inclusion in the DSM-5. And right now, it's being proposed in a way that basically just describes it in pretty much the same way that I just said, and basically with the stipulation that if someone who is more than a year after a loved one dies and they're still experiencing intense yearning and longing for the person, deep sorrow and emotional pain, and feeling very, very preoccupied with thoughts and memories of that person, and at the same time feeling like they can't engage in their own ongoing life in a meaningful way, then clinicians are being encouraged to diagnose the condition of complicated grief, or what they're calling it right now is bereavement disorder or bereavement-related adjustment disorder, and that's all not totally decided. But
so it becomes a disorder when people cannot move forward in an otherwise recognized mourning process.
Exactly. Correctly? Exactly.
Okay. So once you've identified it, let's talk about how you would go about treating it. And I understand there's something called complicated grief therapy. If you wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit.
Sure, I'm happy to talk about that. And basically, I'd like to talk about it by describing its basic principles, the basic principles of the approach, and a little bit about the assumptions of it. And then I'll tell you about what we exactly do, because complicated grief treatment is a treatment that's been efficacy tested. So we've done a prospective randomized controlled trial that showed it more effective than a kind of more standard supportive kind of therapy. But it, I'm sure, is not the only way that you can treat these people. So the principles on which this is based are that really what we were just talking about in terms of the fact that complicated grief can be considered a condition that emerges because essentially the usual adaptive grief that one experiences doesn't progress, and sort of the mourning process has been stymied or derailed in a sense. And so what we do in complicated grief treatment is we try to facilitate the normal grief process at the same time as we look for and address whatever it is that's complicating the grief. So let's start with that. So what's complicating the grief is usually some form of preoccupation or rumination about some aspect of the circumstances of the death or the consequences of the death. And what do I mean by that? It's like very often it's something that the bereaved person thinks could have been done differently, it could have gone differently, and that would have basically meant the person didn't die. So it might be, a simple example is, why didn't I tell my loved one not to go to work the day of 9/11? So that's an example of a violent, sudden death where the person might say that. And of course, they might have had no reason to do that, but they still, they just keep saying that over and over again, if only. It's kind of the if onlys. Or they might say, if it's a natural death, they might say, well, why didn't I encourage my loved one to go to the doctor earlier so they could have been diagnosed earlier and then the doctor would have been able to treat them. And that again becomes a refrain, a sort of rumination. Or it might be, I can't possibly manage without this person in my life. I can't possibly do that. And they just, how am I possibly going to even get from one day to the next? I can't do it. And they kind of become very preoccupied with that. So that's the kind of thing that can complicate the grief, because when you're doing that, you're not really coming to terms with the fact that the person is gone. So we're trying to help people address those complications. And then in terms of the normal grief process or the normal mourning process, we know certain things about that and we try to facilitate them. So what do we know? One thing is that in order to really come to terms with the death of someone very close, we need to confront some intensely emotionally painful information and essentially learn it. And we know that people don't do that very easily. And so the process seems to be one where you kind of go there, you think about it, and then you set it aside and you really divert your attention and think about something else. And that something else might be something as simple as watching a movie, or it might be starting to plan for some things that you might that might be interesting to you or that you're going to do in your ongoing life. But it's really that oscillation between confronting the pain and setting it aside. So we try to help people see that they do that naturally, and they are usually still doing that naturally. And also, we try to encourage them to pay attention to that and even do it more, and to find the rhythm for themselves that will be most helpful. And the other thing we know about mourning when it's most successful is that a person does do this kind of dealing with the loss, that is really comprehending the learning, really the finality and the consequences of the loss. And also they begin to think about and talk about restoration of their ongoing life or renewal of the capacity to experience joy and satisfaction in their lives. So we work with people in a way that addresses both of those things in each and every session. So the complicated grief treatment that we do is a 16-session treatment in which we have an introductory phase where we talk to people about their loss and also about other important people in their lives, because, you know, mourning and grief is not something that we do well all by ourselves. We naturally need companionship. And so the therapist and people who have complicated grief are often feeling very estranged from other people in their lives. So the therapist is going to be one of those companions for them that's going to kind of bear witness to the processing of the loss and also be supportive and soothing and gently encouraging them in terms of their renewal of their ongoing life. And also we work to help reconnect people with other people in their lives.
So do you involve family, other family members, friends inside therapy? I guess I'm interested too to know that what a patient who comes to you or another mental health professional for this would be experiencing, not just inside the office, but outside, if there's homework or other kinds of exercises, or how you involve other people close to them.
Sure, so we do actually invite people to bring in someone close to them. And most people will take us up on that. So we actually invite them to bring someone in so that they can understand, so someone else in their life can understand what they're going through, and also, meaning what they're going through in complicated grief, and also what they're going to be doing in the treatment. Because the treatment we do does ask people to move out of their comfort zone. And yes, it does involve what we call interval plans or between session activities that I guess you could call it homework, but it really is kind of a way of taking the work that we're doing and some of this activation of the normal mourning process out into their everyday life, which of course is absolutely essential that people do. And we try to help them do that with at least one other person in their life, because that's a much better way to do it.
And you mentioned a 16-week session in general.
Right.
What happens when you find somebody just doesn't appear to be moving forward or recovering in the way that you might expect with this kind of treatment?
Well, you know, like any treatment, of course, there are people who do very well with it, and we know that on average they do better than with a sort of more standard kind of therapy. But, of course, there are always people who have trouble with one part or another of it. And so, you know, in a research study, we can't do too much about that. We're just looking at that. But in working with people, what we do is we try to find whatever it is that's being especially hard for them and work with them on that. And, you know, usually we can get past the sticking points, but it may take a little time. So I would say that, you know, to say that everyone is much better after 16 weeks is not very realistic, but this kind of treatment provides a framework, again, for clinicians to work with bereaved people.
So you also mentioned that this, as a disorder, is just being proposed to the DSM. What would you like to see in terms of research for the future, or any other thing that might help clinicians treat patients with this for the future?
Sure. Well, I think we still need a lot more research on a number of areas, topics related to complicated grief. One would be there's never been a real epidemiologic study of complicated grief, and that, of course, helps us understand risk and protective factors when we do an epidemiologic study, and that in turn would offer the possibility of prevention, perhaps, of early intervention and prevention, which I think most people in the field would love to see. So that's a big one. And kind of along those lines, we need to know a lot more about the neurobiology of bereavement, you know, what exactly is happening in the brain when we experience this kind of really highly painful and disruptive experience, and then what usually happens, what are the processes, what are the neurobiological and psychological processes that unfold when things go well, and where are we seeing the neurobiological problems? And we have a little bit of a hint of that, but you know, but we need a lot more research about that. And of course, you know, this is a field where there's been almost no treatment research. Actually, we've done probably one of the only really prospective large scale studies of treatment, and we have another one underway right now where we're looking at the efficacy of antidepressant medication when it's administered either alone or in combination with this complicated grief treatment. So I think that's another, but we still need, you know, we're going to need novel psychopharmacologic interventions and certainly more psychotherapy treatment development. It makes a lot of sense as well.
It does. This is something that we're all going to face in one form or another. So we'll look forward to that in the future. Thank you very much, Dr. Scheer. And this is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.